Hello, everyone, and welcome to Real Estate Right Now. My name is Jay Izzo, and we are live from the Linda Craft Studios right here in Raleigh, North Carolina, part of the Research Triangle Park. And I got to tell you something. Today's show is going to be absolutely magnificent. It's going to be one of those shows that you absolutely want to be a part of because it's something I promise you that most all of you have at least thought about more than once. And that is, you know, well, let's just start this way. You know, when you go to HGTV, and I know that a lot of you who listen to the show or watch the show are also people who are interested in watching HGTV, right? Home and Garden Television. And you know, one of the things that we see in Home and Garden TV is people who buy these houses, right? They fix them up and then they sell them for this immense profit. Now, come on, let's be honest with each other. There has been at least one time where you've thought, man, I think I could do that. I think that I could actually be able to, you know, buy a home and maybe flip it over. But you know what? It's challenging. It's not as easy as it looks on TV. Let's be honest. It's a lot of that scripted. So how do you buy a home, fix a home, and then flip it over for a profit? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. And I've got a great guest. He's no stranger to real estate right now. His name is Steve Kruger. He is a listing specialist and buying specialist for Linda Craft and Team Realtors. And he's actually part of a program with Linda Craft Team Realtors, and that is the Fix and Flip program. And he's going to talk a little bit about that. But we're going to talk about right now what's going on in the marketplace, because right now the marketplace has done a little shifting. And if you haven't been paying attention, it certainly has looks a little differently. So first of all, hey, Steve.
How are you doing, Jay?
Great. And by the way, thanks for coming back on the show.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.
And so Steve, first of all, let's give people some of your credentials. How long you've been doing real estate?
So I've been in real estate for a little over 16 years and have been with Linda Craft Team for 9.5 of those years.
And You are part of the Fix and Flip program, which we're going to get to eventually here. But one of the things that is happening right now is we've had, would you say 2 years of this market that's just been kind of off the charts, where we've just seen a lot of equity being built in and that we're seeing home prices. We're skyrocketing. I don't know if any other word. Is that a good word to use? Skyrocketing?
Skyrocketing is a great word for the last 2 years.
And but recently, an article has come out. I think MSNBC put out an article
that
said that this is the first time we're actually starting to see a little bit of a pull.
That is correct.
So let's talk about that a little bit, about what's going on in the market in terms of this pullback. What you're seeing here locally in the Research Triangle Park.
Yeah. So you're exactly right. If you look at the last 2 years, when in 2020, when we first all started hearing the word COVID and thinking about its implications, the real estate market went into hibernation for like a month. And so that's like March, April, May, all of a sudden people are feeling comfortable seeing houses again. June, the market went nuts, at least here, and it was pretty much nationwide everywhere, right?
Right.
And it stayed that way. It stayed that way for 2 years. So, and it was literally from like June of 2020 till June of 2022. So it was exactly 2 years of just unfettered growth.
Right.
It was nothing any of us ever expected to see. I doubt we'll ever see something like it again. I mean, around here, a lot of houses went up 50% in 2 years' time. I've listed and sold plenty of houses the last 2 years where I would look at the numbers and be like, you just bought this house.
Right.
Which is one of the things I think is so cool about it is I would see young people that had bought their first home and they're already like, I've got all this equity, let's sell. And I'm like, you've already got, excuse me, $200,000 equity in your home that all of a sudden is like your wealth at the moment as a young person. And really, I guess it doesn't matter what age you are, but it's that's a great foundation, right? We're talking people that just had their first child. So now they're thinking about getting a bigger house. And it's like, wow, look how much money you've made in this time frame. So it grew incredibly. And then it was right around June, we started noticing here in the Triangle, I certainly started noticing, talking to some other agents on the team, that things very rapidly went from, we put a house on the market and expect 25 showings and 7 offers in the next 3 days, to I only have 3 showings scheduled for this weekend. And it was like, that was a warning sign, right? And so we've continued to see that trend. Now, we very frequently get more than 3 showings in a weekend. I just activated a house yesterday. That's where I had, today was the first day of showings. We've already had like 8 showings on that house. So I don't want to scare people off and think not getting lots of showings. What I have seen the market do is normalize, and at a speed none of us saw coming. I mean, I knew things were changing, but did I think we were going to go from like a train speeding at 250 miles an hour to one going 5 miles an hour like that?
Right.
I didn't anticipate that. But that's what's happened. And so what we're seeing here, what I've noticed, again, it just feels like what the market was like before the pandemic. Houses around here, at least, are still selling in a what we would have always considered a normal amount of time.
Right.
I haven't seen the data on days on market recently, but we're probably back to like we're 30 days on market as an average.
Okay.
Kind of makes sense versus 2 days on market
average.
That price drop was 0.77%, I believe was the number, which is significant because you don't normally see a price drop of that amount June to July, because it's one of the more popular, one of the busier months of the year for selling houses. But it does make sense when you look at the big picture and what all happened, right? Because the increasing interest rates caused a slowdown in demand.
Right.
I'm sure there's some parts of the country feeling it a lot worse than the Triangle. The Triangle is one of the fastest growing markets in the entire country. We have people moving here every single day.
Yeah, but they're saying like 60 to 90 people a day.
Yeah.
I think it's the number.
Yep. And honestly, regardless of what the interest rate is, they got to buy a house, right?
Right.
They can't just sit on the fence. So where the change has come is the people that don't, you know, they can delay it. They kind of feel like, I'm going to see what interest rates do.
Right.
I don't necessarily think that's the smartest thing if you're, say, a first-time home buyer. Buy it, refinance it when the rates get better. It might be a little while. And the prices are still, everything we're hearing, they'll still appreciate back to normal rates of, let's call it, 6% a year. But if you look at people that have a mortgage from the last, 5 to 10 years with these rates, I mean, especially recently, but, let's say you have a 3.5% interest rate. All of a sudden, you're not saying, I'm going to tap all this into all this equity in my house and buy a more expensive house because the interest rate, you're going to go from a 3.5% interest rate to a 5.75 or whatever it may be. So that has just brought us back to just a more normalized market. Mm-hmm. So I expect what we've seen here, I would call just a plateau. We've literally just leveled off. So the houses I'm selling right now are selling very close to the comps from a month or two ago, 2 months ago. That's certainly different from the last 2 years where I couldn't predict. I would say, let's price it at the most recent sale, knowing that's going to give us multiple offers and go even higher because we were growing at 2% a month. You'd almost know, I'm going to price it here. And it's already, that if that sale was only from a month ago, we're still probably 2% higher than that, right? So that's what has changed. Mm-hmm. I think in a lot of ways it's very good because I like being on the selling side the last 2 years because all I did, I don't want to say all I did, but it was very nice to be able to put a house on the market, take multiple offers, right?
Right.
As a buyer's agent, that was not something you enjoyed because, and it wasn't enjoyable for the buyers because you've got to go, it was very inefficient. I would have to go drive out to see one property because there was only maybe one house every week, every 2 weeks that even met the criteria of what my clients were looking for.
Right.
So instead of saying, let's drive around and see 6 houses and being efficient with my time and my gas and their time and their gas, it's let's go see this house. And then a week later, let's go see this house. And every time we liked it, they liked it. We're putting in an offer, competing with all these other people. If a house gets 10 offers, your odds of winning that offer are 10%. Right. Unless you're working with somebody on Linda Kraft team where we know what we're doing and you increase your odds substantially.
Right. Okay, let me ask you this. Inventory, of course, we've seen an increase in inventory. Are we seeing an increase in inventory across all price ranges, or are we seeing inventory in specific price ranges increase?
I'm seeing it in everything. Okay. The inventory is growing for several. Well, part of the growth is previously you put it on the market and it became under contract.
Right.
So the active home inventory is growing because now all of a sudden they're not selling in the first 3 days that they hit the market.
Sure.
But yes, you're seeing it in every price range, I think.
So one of the concerns has been in this market, even and now that is changing, is that and I've talked about this on other shows with mortgage lenders and other folks, that the first-time home buyer is maybe having a little bit of a struggle. How is the changing in market, changing in interest rates, how is that affecting maybe the first-time home buyer?
So that's a great question. The so, and that applies very strongly here in North Carolina. We are one of only a handful of states that are what's called a due diligence state. Mm. And a home buyer has to put down a non-refundable deposit called due diligence fee in our state. During the last 2 years, as competitive as the market was, that was, in addition to the purchase price, the biggest differentiator. If I get five offers and the top three are all really close in purchase price, mm. the one with the highest due diligence fee wins.
Right.
So first-time home buyers, that was really complicated. They tend to have less cash.
Right.
So now they're competing. And we had a lot of investment in this area with companies coming in, buying our properties to make rental properties. And they were cash buyers. So those cash buyers just had advantages versus these first-time home buyers. And then they also had, like I said, So the big difference there too for the first-time home buyer was that cash buyer didn't need an appraisal. You're a first-time home buyer in our state, and you make an offer well above list price, and you've got this big due diligence fee. If you were lucky, you could get it for $10,000 due diligence fee, but often higher. But we'll call it, for a first-time home buyer, $10,000. If that house appraises $10,000 less, we were having to do things where we're saying we're not going to negotiate appraisal. So now they need their down payment, their closing costs, and $10,000 to make up the difference.
Wow.
to get into that house and make it all work, which was really, really tricky. I felt like first-time home buyers had the most difficult situation in this market. Everybody else, if you were selling a house and buying, you had plenty of cash to make this all work because you were about to collect all the equity in your house to buy this next one.
Right.
Or you were somebody that's already far enough along in life, have a certain level of wealth. So the first-time home buyers were really, really badly affected. So I feel like at the moment, this market, even with the higher interest rates, is much better for first-time home buyers, at least in North Carolina, because it's getting so much less competitive. They can do a more normal due diligence fee, not put so much risk there, with the lower fee, more ability to negotiate appraisal. So all those things are helping the first-time home buyer. The other thing for a first-time home buyer, the interest rate is certainly affecting the total purchase price you can make on a house because you're focused on what your monthly payment is.
Right.
But I would say if you look at interest rates historically, you know, they fluctuate, right? So you buy it now and at some point refinance to that lower rate when it comes around, you're still better off than if you sit around and wait a year or two for that rate to change, because this is not 2007. We're not going to see prices fall off the map, and you're going to get a better value. We are still, everything you read, everything we're seeing, they're still expecting kind of normalized appreciation. So even though you're hoping for a better interest rate, you hold out another year, you're going to pay 5% more maybe for that house.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, rent rates are through the roof.
Right, right.
So if you're a first-time home buyer, even at and let's face it, you and I both know from having bought houses at interest rates far, far higher than 5.75.
Yeah.
I think my first house was 7.5%.
Yeah, right.
So it's still a great interest rate.
It's a great interest rate. I mean, it's still a great interest rate. I think one of the things that, you know, when first-time home buyers, and there's people who watch the show, and by the way, thank you for everybody who's watching the show, but I think there are people out there going, man, it just seems like every time I save some money, I just got to keep saving some more, you know, and I just feel like I can't quite get there. You know, how do you advise them, you know, in terms of, you know, they're almost there, but they're not quite there. I mean, do you have advice for them that you give them when they're trying to get there a little bit closer?
Yeah, certainly. So that's one more, you actually speak of advantage or the market at the moment, and even with these interest rates for the first time home buyer, the decreased pressure on prices and all these people buying and competing with these first time home buyers is helping them with something that we have been doing for a very long time to help first time home buyers is we're back to being able to ask the seller to pay some of the buyer's closing costs. Mm. We, for the last 2 years, that was just non-existent. I don't know if I sold a house in the last 2 years where there were seller paid closing costs, because as a buyer's agent, I would, and so would every other agent, say, you need the best, cleanest offer.
We don't want
to ask for these closing costs. And you also knew the sellers probably were going to reject your offer. And the reason for that is, if I'm on the listing side and we just got, you know, your offer is $250 and you want $5,000 in closing costs, and another offer is $245 and no closing costs, even though the net to the seller is the same amount, the $245 is more attractive without closing costs. Because what if the house doesn't appraise for $245 and you're coming back and saying, we don't have the money to make it work? So there are reasons sellers didn't want to do that. Now sellers are going to be a lot more negotiable when they're kind of getting the price they want, but it took 2 weeks to get there, and they all of a sudden have anxiety that they didn't have over the last 2 years. So you can get some of those closing costs. So when I talk to a first-time home buyer, I do want to have a conversation about how much money they have to bring to the table, because sometimes you talk to a first-time home buyer and they don't understand that a loan has all on its own, let's call it $5,000 roughly of costs. That's on top of whatever their down payment is. And then they're going to need their closing attorney fees and money to do home inspections, right? So they're going to need, let's just say you're shopping for a $300,000 home and you're doing 3% down. They need $9,000 for that. They need $5,000 for their closing costs. And then maybe $1,500 for the rest of what I was talking about. They need like $15,000. So if they tell me I've only got $10,000, all right, well, we'll try to find a seller that'll pay $5,500 in closing costs, right? We're back to being able to try to make that happen. If they tell me I have $5,000 cash, I'm suggesting keep saving some money. Let's talk when you're up a little higher, or can someone in your family gift you the money, or whatever it may be. Because certainly...
Is there a limit on gifts?
That's a better question for a lender than for me. I should know the answer to that.
Okay.
And I think that depends on the type of loan, the lender, and everything else.
Got it. Yeah.
But yes, there can be.
Yeah.
But you can get into a house pretty cheaply when you can get the sellers to pay your closing costs, because now you just need your down payment, your legal fees, and your inspection costs. And if you find there are some options out there for 100% financing. Right. If you're a veteran, that's a 100% financing opportunity. If you want to buy a house that is USDA approved, USDA loan is 100%.
Got it.
So first-time home buyers that will, are fine buying a house. Now, you can't find a USDA home pretty much anywhere in Raleigh,
right,
but you could in other areas right around here. So maybe I'm talking to somebody and I'm like, are you okay with living in Anger, where we can find a house that's USDA, 100% financing?
Right.
Maybe we even get the seller to pay the closing costs. You can get into that house for $1,500, $2,000. So there's options out there for sure.
Well, and by the way, he just did use the word Anger. That literally is a place. Paul Fitz, who's been on the show, says Zebulon. When it comes to gifts, he's a lender, Paul Fitz, with Advantage Lending. He says you could give as much as you want, but you may want to consult an accountant before you do this, what Paul is saying here.
Because of tax purposes.
Yeah. By the way, Zebulon and Anger are literally towns that we have here in North Carolina, including a town called Lizard Lick that we have right near.
Well, that's fairly well known because of the reality TV show.
Yeah, right. There was
Lizard Lick Towing.
Lizard Lick Towing, right. So if you want to look that up, it's really true. If you want to, if you're listening to us on a podcast or whatever and you're going, Lizard Lick, North Carolina, there's really such a place? Yeah, there really is such a place. Matter of fact, look it up. You can find it. Okay, so let's transition a little bit here because I started to think about, okay, well, so maybe you're kind of a first-time home buyer and you're thinking, well, you know, maybe what I do here is I can buy a house a little cheaper and knowing that it's going to take a little work.
Right.
Right? I mean, is that a real possibility, right?
I think that's a fantastic idea. What I plan to do with my own children when they're ready to buy houses. Now, I'm hoping they come right out of college and make, extremely high salaries.
Right.
But, well, even if they do, actually, I'd still give them the same advice because I want them to build a lot of wealth over their lifetime. So that is a great opportunity to go in, buy a house at a discounted value. Often that discount is just based on things that are aesthetic. You know, you get a discount off the price of the home by more than what it costs to paint, put in flooring, etc. If you do the work yourself, even bigger savings, right? So you're a first-time home buyer and you're willing to paint the entire inside of the house instead of hiring somebody.
Right.
You can do that fairly cheaply. And, these days, if you're buying a 2,500 square foot house, that might cost you $7,500 to paint if you pay a professional. And if I'm pricing out a house that could really use that paint, I think there's about a $15,000 deduction in the value for a house that looks like it needs paint. Right. So you walk into a house, you like it, but you're like, it needs a fresh coat of paint. You're already getting built-in equity as soon as you paint that house. It's a great way, like I said, to start building wealth for the rest of your life.
So here's the thing. It seems like it's an easy thing for me to say to find a house that needs a little work.
Right.
But those houses can be difficult to find, can't they?
They can. They're getting easier as the supply has grown. And I don't know, if you're a first-time home buyer, you don't want to get in over your head. The houses that are great for professional house flippers that need a ton of work, they're extremely distressed. They have rotted siding. They have an HVAC that doesn't work. They have holes in the sheetrock, you name it. Whatever it is, mold in the crawl space. I don't think a first-time home buyer, unless they have a ton of cash, should be getting involved in a project like that. But if you walk into a house. I just sold one in Knightdale that somebody is getting a good value on. It's a $350,000 house. That's exactly what I'm talking about. What they just bought, they haven't closed on it yet, but when they do, it needs carpet and it needs paint. The rest of the house is great. They put in new carpet, paint the house on the inside. Right. The outside is vinyl siding. They have probably, for the cost of that, added $25,000 to the house in value, maybe $20,000. Okay. And it's not going to cost $20,000 to paint the house and put in carpet.
Right.
So that is a great way as a first-time home buyer. And then the other.
Yeah, do you help people find things like this? I mean, is that something that you can do? I mean, like if somebody comes to you and says, "Hey, Steve, look, I'm a first-time buyer, or maybe I'm an investor."
Right.
Right. And you go, Can you be on the lookout for me, or can you help me find a property that, you know, maybe needs a little work? Now, what's the point of no return on this, where you go, you know, this may be a little out of your league? Is there a percentage that you like to use, or is there?
I don't know if there's a percentage. On a first-time home buyer, I'm looking at it. Let's just, the average first-time home buyer is not going to have a ton of cash. And most first-time home buyers that I've encountered really would still just pay a premium and have something move-in ready. You don't find too many of them that are saying, like, let's find something that takes a little work to add to our value. But if they were to do that, then I'm probably thinking, well, what can you do? And I'm going to have that conversation, maybe not be specific about how much money they have, but you know, can you afford to do these things? So we'll go look at a house. And I often do this even when I don't think that's what the person's looking for. I'll walk into a house with a first-time home buyer or any home buyer and say, you know, you've got an opportunity here to get a good deal on this house and build some instant equity just by doing some updates here.
Right.
I had a first-time home buyer that we'd walk into a house and he wasn't thrilled with the paint, the cabinets, the countertops. And I'm like, what you have to appreciate at the same time is, and this guy had the money, you could improve these things, get what you want, and you've just added $15,000-$20,000 to your net worth because now your house is worth, you know, you bought it for $250 and you invested $10 and now it's worth $275. You just added $15,000 to your equity. And so you essentially made $15,000 profit in just in the first month of owning this house. So for them, that's kind of how I look at it. Now for an investor, the ones that are looking to flip houses tend to have enough capital to do almost anything. So the worse the house, the better. I mean, if that thing is just uninhabitable, there's more profit to be made.
Right. So let's talk about, because we talk about the market, is there a market that's better for fix and flip than others? Like, I mean, what should you be looking for in a market where you go, okay, this is a prime market to fix and flip?
That's actually a really good question, because over the last 2 years, what I've been struggling with when pricing things, when looking at fix and flip, when talking to buyers and sellers about the value of the house, when supply is so limited and so much lower than demand, these kind of rules of thumb that I use, that like you can put this much in and double your money, that wasn't really the case the last 2 years. A buyer didn't have enough choices. So a good example is, I'll often say, you know, I'm looking at a house that I'm thinking, as is, it's worth 250. Put in 25 grand, now it's worth 300. You've just doubled your money. It wasn't like that the last 2 years. That house that should have been worth 250, because the value, the completely renovated value was 300, and it took 25 grand to get there, it might sell 30 grand below the ARV, which meant there was almost no profit there in doing those things. There was a little bit. And don't get me wrong, when you were dealing with an auction market that we were in, you don't know quite what that's really going to do. But because of the limited choices that buyers had, they were far more willing to take on projects.
Right.
Now they're back to being picky. If you want to understand what's really happened to the real estate market the last month and why those prices dropped by 0.77%, buyers are no longer walking in and saying, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like that, but there's nothing else to choose from, so I'll live with it.
Right.
Now they're saying, you know what, there's going to be more houses coming along.
Right.
Nobody felt that way for 2 years. They feel that way again. So now is a much better time, I think, for fix and flip and even flipping than what we had for the last 2 years. Because it was more difficult to get a high enough return on your investment when doing those things.
So let me ask you this question. You brought up three letters in the middle of your talk here that we probably need to explain.
Yeah.
You just kind of threw them out there at us, and they kind of just fell off your tongue.
Right.
Just really easy.
Yep.
And you said ARV, which I don't think has anything to do with RVing at all.
No.
So what is ARV mean, and what is that?
Yeah. So, and it is, you're right. It's just something that comes out when you're talking about, essentially in house flipping more than anything. ARV is after repair value.
Okay.
So if I analyze a house, and this is what house flippers do, you want to know the current value or as is value and the ARV or after repair value.
Okay.
And then to determine if you're a house flipper, if there's enough profit in there, you're comparing those numbers. So if you're flipping houses and you can buy the property for $250, and I tell you the ARV is $350 and it costs $50,000 to make those repairs, you know, I'm throwing all kinds of numbers. People probably need to like
have
their...
It's $100,000.
You should have your abacus out.
Right. So you have $100,000, right?
But then, well, then minus the $50,000. Let's see, because I said you buy it for $250,000, you sell it for $350,000, and you got $50,000 in repairs. So your profit's $50,000.
Okay.
Now, you do have out of that as well your fee to your real estate broker, okay, who earns every penny of it.
Right.
And then you have your profit.
Right.
So, but that's why ARV is such a key figure for everybody, because it's... Flipping houses is basically, if I invest this much money, what's my return? And the way to calculate all that is to know what your ARV is. And if you're wanting to do that and you want to know what your ARV is, you need to talk to somebody who has sold an awful lot of houses, yeah, has a lot of market knowledge, right, and can give you a very good estimate of your ARV.
Well, you've done this a lot.
Yep.
I know that you're trying not to recommend yourself.
I would gladly recommend to myself. If you want to flip houses, I can help you.
Yeah, I know that you ought to recommend yourself. But the truth of the matter is, you've done this calculation over and over and over again. Is the AR, when you look at the ARB, is there do you look at it per percentage wise and go, this is the percentage number we want to hit, or is it, no, I just want to make X number of dollars at the end of the day? I mean, how do you? Is it that? I guess that's the kind of thing I'm trying to interested in. You know, like, do you, let's say, is it worth it for a $3,000 profit, or do you go, I'm not going to do this unless I'm. How does that work?
That's another great question, Jay. The at $3,000, probably not, because one thing that you always have to keep in mind, this is if you're flipping houses.
Right, right.
When we talk about the fix and flip program we have at Linda Craft Team, it's flipping your own house,
right,
which would not have capital gains tax.
Right.
But if you're a house flipper professionally, you have capital gains tax. So if you made $3,000, now the capital gains tax comes out of that as well. Probably wasn't worth the risk, let alone the effort. So you've got to have in your mind what kind of number you want. A rule of thumb that's been used for a really long time is that a house flipper wants to pay 70% of the ARV.
Okay.
So if the ARV was $300,000, they want to buy that house, 70% would be $210,000.
Got it.
That changed, you know, back to your question about the time of year. Over the last 2 years, people that were flipping houses, which there were far fewer,
right,
that number shrank because they just couldn't get that. And that goes back to what I was saying about the price you could get for a house that needed improvements,
right,
was actually getting a high closer to ARV values than what they do in a normal market.
Got it.
So we're back to a more normal market, and that spread's a little different. But every market's different. Not everywhere can you pay 70%
right
of the ARV. It's a great goal to shoot for.
Right.
You're not always going to see that. But if the numbers all work and you're like, I'm willing to invest $300,000 to make $50,000, even if what your purchase price on the house wasn't, you know, it was more like 80% of ARV.
Right.
If you're comfortable with that number, that's what's important too, right? So when I talk to people that want to flip houses, you know, the question is, what's the another three letters, ROI,
right,
return on investment that you're looking for,
right,
and compare that. And people that have wealth and are building wealth, they already have a number in mind of what they want, right, for their return on investment. They're looking at, I can just put my money in the stock market because I feel like long-term I'm going to get 12% annually.
Right.
So if I'm going to put it into a house, I want to make more than 12% return on my investment.
Got it.
Something like that. So that number becomes important to that person as well.
So there's, I know everybody has seen them, right? There's these signs on the street sometimes, or there's this symposium that they're going to do about how easy it is.
Right.
You know, I guess they charge you to purchase a program, and you go in and you listen to this seminar on how these folks are able to flip houses,
right,
so easy. And you'll sometimes see a handwritten sign going, you know, get a house with no cash.
Right.
All right.
We buy ugly houses.
We buy ugly houses or whatever, right? Or whatever they're saying, right? The question I think people want to know, and I'm sure they do, is that stuff real?
So I'm sure there are people that have subscribed to those programs, made money, and would honestly tell you, right, what a great investment it was.
Right.
I would say the vast majority would tell you no, it wasn't.
Right.
Because what they're asking you to spend money on and what they're teaching you, in some ways you could probably learn without paying them all that money.
Right.
Carlton Sheets was a guy, if you remember back probably in the 90s, 80s,
right,
that had a whole program. And I read the book, I believe it was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that he subscribed to the Carlton Sheets method.
Right,
credits it for part of his wealth generation.
Guy Kawasaki.
Yeah.
Was that
Guy Kawasaki. Yeah, okay. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that those things can't work, just like Carlton Sheets. I had a roommate that bought the Carlton Sheets videotape. This was before DVD.
So the VHS.
Right.
The old VHS.
I remember that sitting there on the entertainment center. I never watched it. Doing what I do now, I wish I had watched it. But he watched it, never made any money from it. So if you were to ask him, was it worth the $20 he spent on that videotape? Probably not. Those programs, Tony Fink that works here on the team, we went to one of those seminars one time. Excuse me. And you can get some good information from it. There was almost nothing in there Tony and I didn't know. But if you're new to real estate, it can be informative. Right. I would just be hesitant to spend the money on the seminars. I have a buddy that went and did that, you know, because they encourage you sign up for this weekend in Atlanta and it's $1,000. And then once you get there, they're like, sign up for the gold package, which is $10,000 or whatever it may be. And from what I've heard, at least one person in particular, and I won't throw names out there, but I would imagine they all follow a similar business model. They really are just trying to become hard money lenders. Mm. And we could get into a whole conversation on hard money lending, but what they want is they're teaching you so that you go out and flip houses, use them for the hard money loan, so they're making 15% or whatever on your effort and teaching you how to do it. So that's where they're making all their money. The seminar that you're paying them some money certainly is generating money.
Right.
But they're transforming themselves into hard money lenders is what they seem to be doing.
So a lot of times, you know, HGTV is so huge, you know, home garden television, that's a big deal. And people see I opened up the show talking about how people see these folks fix and, you know, they buy the house and they flip it and then they fix it. And everybody believes, and then it'll give the cash. They made, you know, $90,000 or $120,000 or $300,000. What is the realistic expectation? Is that just for show, or is that a common reality? Or because I mean, people are thinking about this as a wealth strategy often. You know, that, okay, I can do this, right? Mm-hmm. I love real estate. I want to get into real estate, and I think I want to get into the fixing and flipping. What's the reality?
The reality is probably somewhere not too far off of what you're seeing on TV. They're certainly cherry-picking, because those are professional house flippers.
Right.
That the reality is they are very good at what they do. They make a very good living at it.
Right.
So, and that's the opportunity that's out there for everyone. And that's the appeal of it, right? We watch it on TV.
Right.
And we want to be that person because it's exciting. It makes a lot of money and it seems easy. They will even tell you it's not that easy. You have to know what you're doing. They'll tell you.
And there's risk.
There's huge risk.
There's that disclaimer, you know, on the show that says, by the way, don't be fooled. Every investment that you make, even in housing, is risk. Right. Yeah.
And I will say, every book I've read about house flipping and real estate investment, every one of those flipping experts that I've ever heard talk, they'll all tell you the same thing, that the most important thing, first step in all this, is get the advice of a real estate professional who has strong market knowledge, because they understand that real estate professional is going to help you minimize your risk.
Got it.
If you go out there and you don't know anything about how real estate really works, you think you do.
Right.
You know, you can say, I've bought 7 houses in my lifetime. I know everything there is to know.
Right.
You really don't.
Right.
I'm sorry. I sold 7 houses in a month. So not every month, I'm not claiming that, but I have sold 7 houses in a month. You know, you need that expert advice to make sure you're making the right decision. And then the profits all do depend on how much you're willing to risk. So when they show you a house that they made $150,000 profit, they bought into a fairly expensive house that probably needed a lot of work to produce the largest total, you know, return. So
yeah, versus, because you're not going to buy, you're not buying a $200,000 house and making $150,000.
Right. And I would say if you're just starting out, my advice, and what if I was working with somebody, what I'd be looking to do is identify something much less expensive, get your feet wet, learn what you're doing, work with someone that knows what they're doing. And if you're investing $100,000, and you don't have to invest $100,000 of your own money.
Right.
We could spend all kinds of time on how to do that because you can, and there's benefits to leveraging, right? So get yourself into something that costs $100,000 to purchase and $25,000 to fix that you might make a $20,000 profit on. Right. That's not what you always want to be doing necessarily, but that's where you can start, right? So now you've just made that $20,000, put it into the next one. Don't spend the profits. Keep building. It's a business. And let that build up to where by flip number five, you've amassed $150,000 and you've learned the ins and outs a little bit more and you can maybe take on a little more risk, which has a higher reward.
Okay, listen, I know you don't want to get into it. But maybe because I'm assuming that it's either complicated or there's more than one way to leverage this. Mm-hmm. But I just know in my earphones that you're not wearing that I'm wearing.
Right.
That I just heard a voice from somewhere and that said, whoa, Steve, you opened up a can of worms by saying, well, you don't have to necessarily have the money.
Right.
Right. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I would say if you have the money, a lot of cash is not a bad way to go about doing it, because if you're going to use a hard money loan, which I talked about earlier, you could get into doing this whole thing with a hard money loan, and what they're going to want you to do is probably have 20% invested in it, right? So if the whole project's going to cost $125,000, you're buying the house for $100,000 and it's $25,000 to renovate it. They're going to want you to have 20% of that, which would be $25,000. They'll loan you the $100,000. Now, on that $100,000 loan, you're going to pay points, and you're going to have an interest rate that is much higher than the current interest rates. I would expect, and as interest rates have been rising, I don't even know what hard money lenders are charging at the moment, but let's just call it 12 to 15%. Now, you can still do all the math, do the numbers, and figure out that can still work. And it's a great way for somebody that maybe only has $25,000 to get into house flipping and do what I was talking about. You're not going to make a huge profit on that first one, but start small and build it up. Because, and that's where, it's funny all the tangents we could go on, right?
Because
one of the very important things in flipping houses, whether you are paying cash and it's all your own money, or you're doing a hard money loan, is how quickly you turn the property. Because if you're doing a hard money loan and you turn it really fast, you have less costs than if you're sitting on it. So if you sell it after 3 months, you paid 3 months interest. If you sell it after 6 months, you paid 6 months interest.
So there's a really good point in here, because turnaround time on a fix and flip becomes critical regardless, right? Because, I mean, the longer time that you have that thing before it's on the market.
Right.
I mean, the truth is you're eating into your budget, whether it's a hard money loan or whatever it may be, you're eating into your budget, you know, and I would imagine it becomes significant the longer it gets going. And all of a sudden you have to start recalculating your ARV with over the length of time. This can cause a problem, I would think, because there's been a shortage of workers, and also we've been having a little problem with
supplies,
right? Yep. And so, you know, in a where we're at now, how hard is it to calculate that ARV?
That's a good point. So that's where you take all those things into consideration.
Right.
I like to be conservative. So even my ARV is often a conservative number. So you're hoping to outperform that ARV.
Right.
I would say, again, it comes down to working with professionals, right. Not just the professional real estate broker, but the professional house renovator, right?
Right.
Everybody involved, if you're doing a hard money loan, like have all your ducks in a row to try to minimize the amount of time you're owning that property because you have carrying costs. Even if you're paying cash for everything and you have no loan, you still owe property taxes from day one, right?
Right.
So each month you've got your property taxes each day because it's prorated over the lifetime you own the house. So if you sell it in 3 months versus 6 months, it's half as much taxes. You have carrying costs in the utility bills because you're leaving. You know, we tell people here all the time, I'll sell houses where the buyer, the seller has moved out of town. What should I set my thermostat to? Right? They're cooling a house that nobody even lives in just to be selling it. Right. And we usually suggest 76 degrees.
Yeah.
Because if it's hot in that house in the summertime,
right.
And if you don't live in North Carolina, it gets hot here.
Yeah, we had a warm day today.
Yeah. So if that thermostat's set at 80, people walk in the house, it's hot. You're trying to create an emotional response. I tell people all the time, selling a house to make the most money is all about an emotional response, which right. is actually why house flipping works. The more aesthetically pleasing, the greater the emotional response. The temperature affects that too, right? So you've got this house, it's vacant, you're trying to get it sold, you're paying to cool it down to 76 degrees, you're paying for the lights to be flipped off and on. Yeah. all the time. So all those costs add up and cut into your profit margin.
Right.
So you certainly want to do things as quickly as possible. So that's why I like a conservative estimate on where we're going to set that list price.
Because
at the end of the day, even if I think, you know, I might have been able to start at a little higher list price and hypothetically maybe that made me more money. Maybe not, because multiple offers will tend to set the market price anyway. But if the trade-off is I sold the house really fast and I still made a good profit and I can move on to the next project right away, let's do that. So when I'm setting expectations for the ARV and the list price, I might be a little on the conservative side to help with all those numbers and trying to make it as profitable as you can.
Okay, so I'm thinking through all of this because you're presenting a case where it's not easy to do this. You have to have really think this through, right? I mean, and you have to know your risk tolerance.
Right.
But then, and there's something funny that hit me in the head. I'm just going to ask it. But you know, we always talk about fixing the interior of the house and we talk about fixing the exterior of the house. How much does the yard play a part in, like, I mean, the yard is just a mess and it's tore up. I mean, does the yard matter?
The yard definitely matters. And that's another really good question. I did not prep Jay for that question, but it's actually on a list of notes I had made about what I look at. So to take you through what I consider is giving the return on investment and helping sell a house. And this is true if you're not flipping a house either, whether it's your own or for a profit as a business or whatever, is the first thing everybody ever sees, almost always, is the photograph of the front of your house online. That's their first impression. And we all know the saying, you only have one chance to make a great first impression.
That's correct.
So that is important. It's important for that photo to get them interested in your house in the first place. Because if the front of the house looks awful in that first photo, they may not click it to see how beautiful the inside of the house is.
Right.
So that's step number one. Then they get to the house. If their emotion sitting in the car is, oh, this looks awful.
Right.
Then even if they walk into the house and love everything else about it, you've already started them on a negative footing.
Right.
And I can tell you, and every listing agent in the world can tell you, we have all had showings canceled where the buyer, and buyer's agents could tell you this too from being with that buyer, where buyers will pull up and never walk into the house because they were so turned off by what they saw outside.
Right.
So you're correct that the front of the house, and really the front's more important than the back, because that's your first impression, right? I'm not saying that the back's not important, but it is less important.
Yeah, well, that's what's going to, because there's a psychological principle, right? And you know, I had taught psychology in universities. It's called primacy and recency effects. Mm-hmm. And that is, we remember the things at the beginning and remember things at the end, and we have a tendency to forget the things in the middle.
Right.
Right. Is it not interesting that we remember the front of the house and we end up finishing at the backyard?
Right.
And if those things are both a mess,
yep.
We kind of forget what happened in between,
yeah.
No matter what happened in the middle of the house, right?
Right.
And it just struck me that, you know, that's the way we, you know, if you try to remember a list, right?
Right.
We generally remember the names at the beginning of the list and remember the names at the end of the list. And you go, well, I don't remember. I mean, try naming the presidents, right?
Yeah.
Right,
I was able to do that in the 10th grade, but not since.
I mean, people at home, try naming the presidents.
Right.
You go with George Washington, maybe get through the first few five, and then you kind of remember the last five, and you never remember James K. Polk. Right?
Yep.
But it's true. That's true of the house, and it's because we start at the yard, and we finish at the yard.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. And the what I tell people when it comes. So it's an interesting thing because I say that landscaping is still the thing you want to spend very little on.
Right.
I have people all the time that will come to me, just a list and sell a house. This has nothing to do with flipping. And they'll say, I did all these amazing things with my landscaping. I've planted the most beautiful bushes and trees, and I've got $60,000 worth of landscaping.
Right.
$60,000 worth of landscaping is worth about $0. Maybe it's worth $10,000. I don't want to make it sound like it's zero.
Right.
But if the yard looks really good and you have fresh mulch and your bushes are trimmed, that's the main ingredient, right?
Right.
So if now that's where it can get a little complicated. If that grass looks awful, especially in the front yard, sodding can be a fairly expensive thing. So whether or not to sod, certainly if you're flipping a house, you're calculating all that when you're looking at it.
Right.
If you're doing our fix and flip program, that's just a little too much to invest. And I would say take a little bit of a hit there. Skip that. That would be lower on my list, though I certainly think it could help.
Right.
So the grass, keep it looking as good as possible. And if you do it yourself, trim along the sidewalk and the driveway. Have fresh mulch laid down. Have your bushes trimmed. Everything's going to look good. You want to add a little pop of color. You don't have a lot of, you know, pretty flowers and all that. Mm. You know, get some potted plants to set on the front porch, the steps. All of a sudden, you've added that pop for very little money.
Right.
So you could just go to Lowe's or Home Depot, buy that, throw it on the front porch. Now you've spruced up the photo that's getting everybody's attention. You've helped out the curb appeal. And then that is, in addition to the landscaping, why we do look at things like the exterior. One of the cheapest things I do comes back to the paint. If those shutters and door look like 1990, they're teal or burgundy.
Right.
Those
right.
seem to be the two most popular colors from that era that look like you just know that's
Isn't
the age
that
of the house.
Something. Yeah.
So paint those. Paint them black. Paint them
white.
You know, a dark blue.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if I've white. Probably is like a new trend out in California that's making its way here on shutters.
Probably. That's what I'm thinking is making its way.
It would be interesting versus whatever colors on the rest of the house. But certainly it's cheap. I just showed three houses the other day that had been a house flipper had done all three of them. And it three different houses all in the same town but different parts of town all looked identical. Every single one of them, they painted the front door and the shutters black. You could tell the paint was very fresh.
Right.
You walked in, they all had the exact same LVP flooring. They all had the same lightish gray paint.
Right.
They all had the same granite countertops. They all had white cabinets that were either painted or they had already been white.
Right.
But that was, you know, that simple painting the front door and the shutters definitely updated the look of that house. Think about it. Any of us, we drive up to a house or see a photo and the shutters and the door are burgundy.
Right.
Our first thought is like, that just reminds me of 30 years ago.
Yeah, it reminds me of the house I lived in.
Yep.
Listen, we only have a minute. I mean, this has gone really fast and I've really enjoyed it. I know we didn't talk about the Linda Craft Team Fix and Flip program, but you're in charge of that where actually you will take a look at somebody's house if they're willing to list it about whether we can invest – whether you can, whether LendingCraft can, the LendingCraft team can invest
right.
in that house to flip it. So I guess because we're down to 30 seconds, tell people, you know, the best ways that they can reach you to talk about the Fix and Flip program, or if they want to ask you more questions about investing or getting into fixing and flipping a home, how can they get a hold of you?
So you can reach me on my cell phone at 919-740-9795, or you can email me at steve@lendacraft.com. And be happy to talk to you. If you want to flip houses just to make money, I can certainly give you great advice on that. Or like Jay mentioned, the Fix and Flip program. If you have a house that you feel needs a lot of updating and you want to really maximize the value in that house and make yourself more money, we have a fantastic program. You would, we would finance those improvements and help you put even more money in your pocket.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve. Hey, everybody, listen, this is the Real Estate Right Now show. Listen, I want to just say something to you. First of all, we know you have a lot of choices. You chose us, and I thank you for that. Listen, would you do me a favor? Would you give us a positive review wherever you listen to this podcast? And also, would you tell your friends? You know, because we're trying to help as many people as we can, and we care about you, and we care about them. I'm going to be back next week. It's going to be another great guest. It's going to be another great show, as I say to you every week. Thank you, everybody, and ciao to all of you everywhere.
Up, stand tall. I gotta have strength.